On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. And this episode is supported by PersonalUmbrella.com, where you can quote standalone personal umbrella policies of up to $5 million in 3 minutes online by answering just four simple questions. Our guest today, I'm really happy to introduce futurist David Smith, who's CEO of Global Futures and Foresight, based across the pond there in London. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm excited because I heard you speak at a virtual conference, which is all we're doing these days, I guess, that was presented by Augie. You really covered the gamut of the impact of technology, which is what I understand you study, the impact of technology on various sectors of business and on people's lives, including the insurance world, the insurance ecosystem. And you covered insurtech, carriers, brokers, agents, and the consumer as well. So I thought we could dive in a little bit. Let me ask you, I know you have a lot of studies, like I mentioned, in different sectors. You started off your talk by going into insurtech, some of the developments there, what the insurtechs are doing lately, but more importantly, in my mind anyway, is how the industry, the insurance industry, carriers, brokers, and agents are responding to that. Can you share anything that's going on there?
Yeah, I think the greatest thing is that I think we need to acknowledge the presence and impact of COVID-19 has made everything that was initially seen as being disruptive and impossible, distance engagement of one sort or another, and the use of certain technologies has all of a sudden become, although it was uncomfortable to start with, become quite familiar. And many folk are now saying they're not going back to the old way of doing things. So that means that we're in that sort of lovely halfway house where we sort of got used to lockdown normal, and it's pretty uncomfortable in some ways, but it allows us to get on and do things and carry on working. And the new normal, and I'm going to use that phrase even though I hate it in some respects, whatever emerges as a consequence, this is this wonderful blended environment of human contact as well as distance engagement and understanding the difference between the two and using at the same time, because you're talking about technology, a lot of these Inspects, fintechs, all these other organizations. I'm a fan insurance company or broker will use marketing technology as much as they'll use HR technology and analytical technology. And there's billions and billions being invested in these firms. And the bottom line is they're there to provide little point capabilities. And I think I'm hoping by saying what I did initially about our prompt to use alternative ways of staying in our marketing and engaging, will lead us to look at some of these folk and think about what do they offer, what do they do, and in my strategy, which is remains the most important thing we do, in my strategy about what I'm about, am I customer focused or product focused, what is my principal area of expertise, where do these help, where do they help me achieve what I'm achieving? And if I find that uncomfortable myself, there's plenty of young people around who are quite familiar with a lot of these things or will become familiar quite quickly. So I think we're at a point where we're increasingly going to be engaging with looking at some of these capabilities and deciding if they fit or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how have people in business, how are they getting things done? You mentioned, tell me more about the halfway house. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, right now we've gone from a period where a lot of folk, and I remember speaking at a insurance event in San Antonio, I think it was 2 years ago now, when we were allowed to meet people. I think there were 4,000 people in the audience. And it was great. I love being there. I love the buzz. And I mentioned in the plenary, because I opened the thing up, I'm going to run a workshop on looking at Three Horizon. And Three Horizon is a very straightforward way of looking at what's happening now, what's happening way out, and how I bridge the gap. And I said, I'll run a workshop. And this room was a big room that was set aside for it. There were held a couple of hundred. We had 900 people come. Mm-hmm. You know, so number one, we have an appetite to think about what do we do to embrace all of this newness. Lockdown normally is a sort of halfway house where we've embraced some of this stuff in a sense of urgency. and obligation, we'll have to keep engaging, therefore I'll use it. But what I'm really excited about is if we can maintain that mindset about technology at the same time of reinforcing the humanness of primary engagement. And we've got this wonderful blend where I don't need to do everything face to face. So therefore my productivity is the great elusive element of where techs fail to deliver much in truth, has the potential to make us in any given day much more productive. And at the same time, much more accepted by clients, recognizing that these things are personal, but they're not face to face. So I'm hoping that the real normal, the next normal, if you like, the bit that comes after the lockdown version of normal, when we're less fearful about all of this and its consequences, is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, and of course, the next, what I've been reading about the next iteration of let's say, Zoom calls, video calls, will be much more real. So it'll feel more like you're actually in the same room with the person. And maybe that's where some of the new technologies come into play.
Well, I bet you anything, Peter, in the same way that we said video conferencing will never work, it's got to be person to person, there'll be plenty of people thinking, and forgive me for saying this, but there's no way in the world I'm going to use virtual reality or extended reality. That's for the kids, for playtime. Mm-hmm. These were the same arguments that sort of prevented us wanting to use, computer-based video conferencing for about 20 years, I might add. It's not a new thing. We've got much better at it, of course, and the bandwidth is there to support it. But the video, I don't know if anyone's tried VR. The bottom line is you won't know what it can do until you try it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a great passionate believer in it. It's just a quick story, if I may. I was speaking at a board of, this was last year again, when we were allowed contact, of a large pharmaceutical firm. And I talked about a lot of these technologies and their impact. And I said, how many of you engage with these tools? How many of you use virtual reality? And nobody said yes. I said, well, look, over lunchtime, I'll bring a set in and kick you off. And they queued up like wonderful school children at dinner time. And each took it in turn to put the headset on. And it was of a large sort of brontosaurus in a wood that gets up and swishes around and its tail swoops over someone's head. And then, of course, by then you've sort of got inculcated into it and you think it's real. And everybody in that queue ducked. All the people who had done it stood to one side waiting for the next person to have their turn and duck. And they did. So, we get used to technology stunningly quickly. So human beings are brilliant at engaging new tech, and we are fantastic at resisting trying new tech. So I'm hopeful that this COVID thing, in all of its bad forms that we've had to live with, at least creates the opportunity to loosen our mindset about what can be done.
So given that insurance professionals also are human beings, and they resist at first and then try, this seems to track the collective psyche of what InsurTech has done to them. Obviously, virtual reality is not necessarily all of InsurTech, but it's still more advanced. Things they're not comfortable with or used to, like buying insurance on an app, for example. What is your research showing there? Has there been a shift to more acceptance, embracing these new things?
Yeah, there has, generally, and specifically in insurance. There's been a much higher percentage of people who respond saying that they would be prepared to buy insurance over the web or buy it on an app and buy it through distance engagement and happy to respond with questions, etc., and be put on risk almost immediately having had a technological interaction. And that many are saying that they would be prepared to share more information than they would traditionally with a broker or carrier if they got some advantage from it. Lower price, better terms, more immediate cover, more flexible cover. So the attitude of people, and of course we are now having a growth of the digital native in our society is increasing. So the volume of people who are comfortable with tech in one form or another and the situation we've been through has led us increasingly to say, yes, we would want, I'm more than happy to buy direct insurance. And that's why I say there's an issue for the issue for brokers here. I mean, this as well as I do, is do I compete through my digital channels to provide those capabilities with the carrier? Do I let the carrier host those capabilities on my website through to my potential market and my customers? or do I take it to the customers in a different form so that they recognize my knowledge of them is represented in how I'm being offered and what I'm being offered. So am I expert on the product, if you like? You could argue, are you expert on the route, or are you expert on the customer?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting topic, David. It's been around a while, this concept of who owns the customer relationship, who owns the customer experience is what we call it today. Mm-hmm. The agents and brokers theoretically are closer in most cases to, unless you're a direct response carrier, they're closer to the customer, and therefore maybe you could say that it's a closer relationship. Meanwhile, the carriers have been trying their own ways to build the customer relationship, you know, even if it's just around claims. So it's kind of there's kind of a conflict there, but there's also, and if I had to pick today what side of the business I go into, it would be on the distribution side, the sales and distribution side, because I really feel like there's so many more options to get things written outside of the traditional carrier, because I think there's some upheaval coming there. So what is your take on that? Because I think the technology acceleration, it might bring that to a fore, and it could be winners and losers.
This is the old argument between, if you like, customized, personalized, and commoditized. I think the carrier has the potential, well, they can try and create a relationship with customers. Doesn't tend to be that long lasting or valuable because it is so remote and anonymous. Whereas to me, the broker has a fantastic, the agent has a fantastic opportunity to be expert on the customer, albeit they will have to be credible with their channels and find a way of servicing their clients in a way that the client wants, but actually bringing things that are appropriate to the client. So that, you know, I think the future is much more about broadening what it means to help your clients manage risk in their lives than collecting carriers, a number of carriers, and bringing them as a conduit through to individuals. Okay, you are collectively working out what's best for a client, you would argue, hopefully, and therefore, you know, you'd be a trusted intermediary, which is a valuable position and will remain a valuable position for a very long time, if not even more than today. But it can't be limited long term to just providing insurance products.
Yeah, and I think I was astonished by one of the findings in your talk. You mentioned that you said 16% of millennials think the insurance product is absolutely necessary. Do I have that right?
You do. It's exactly the stat. I think a lot of people, they are saying, is it even necessary in recent surveys? So the truth is, I mean, you don't own a lot when you're young, so we can put that to one side to a degree.
Right.
But even the very idea of owning things and insuring them is not the norm necessarily for all young people. Mm-hmm. If you use things as opposed to own things, then somebody else is responsible for insuring them. You need to insure you and your liability and the risk of what you might do as an individual. But, you know, if the car's not yours and the house isn't yours and the devices you use aren't yours and the office you share isn't yours, then there's not so much you're going to cover personally. So it does really mean we live in a very different world of interdicting risk for individuals.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those younger people, millennials, but behind them a very large generation behind the millennials, there's so many of them that are they have side gigs, they have their own business, one-person businesses, they're not working in corporate jobs. I think I saw a figure that in a couple of years' time, most of the workforce will be freelancers. I think they're under the radar of a lot of these, even small commercial lines policies. The other side of that is, you also said 92% of policyholders expect their insurance providers to help them manage they expect them to help them manage risk. So it goes beyond we've been so focused in the industry around policies, around coverage.
Yeah.
But I think there's another thing going on. And I know a lot of smart carriers and brokers have made this shift to be more about preventing bad things as opposed to the coverage piece, or in addition to the coverage piece.
But that's the issue. The future of whole sections of property casualty, for example, is about prevention and interdiction of risk and mitigation of risk rather than compensation. And that takes a whole new mindset. I mean, it's a very different form of marketing. It's a very different form of engagement in terms of the length in which you might be prepared to, for example, you know, fill your home full of devices recommended by your insurer. I'm not sure you'd do that. You'd probably fill them full of devices that you might pay for and let them use to reduce the policy cost, or you might use your utility to provide them and your insurer needs to acknowledge you've reduced the risk in your home by it being covered in sensors, or your broker. I mean, you might have a long-term relationship with your broker because they're not, neither party is bound to a particular carrier. Therefore, your broker might be the ideal person to recommend a whole bunch of sensors that can identify the potential for risk and therefore bring policies to bear that recognize that in a very direct way. So there's a massive role for the broker there for the long-term relationship. For, as I said, you know, earlier on, you know, for the mitigation and the prevention of loss for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know you also unpack some statistics around how consumers are willing to try new insurance providers, some new brands that may not be so well known. I think that's got to be a concern for the traditional carriers, but also for brokers. I think you said that half of the brokers are fearful about the future. What do they fear?
Well, we've got a bit of a classic here, haven't we? There's been a relatively reliable position for the agent and broker for a long time in the insurance world. And that's been true everywhere for a long time. I'm sure they and everybody else is very clear now that the game in town is changing, not just the principles of insurance and what they mean, the method by which you can engage with insurance, we've talked about earlier, and the mass and potential for new entrants offering new styles of cover. The issue here is, of course, as it's been in the past, is very often these are lower cost or they're cherry-picked free offerings to subsequently gain a larger share of business from that client later on. But if that's your core business being given away as somebody's freebie, you can be in trouble. Quite early. And customers are invariably, and I think increasingly, prepared to try new channels. And I think the quote I gave you was something like 60% of folk when asked said, yes, we would in the US. And it was up to 90% in Mexico or less mature markets. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, no kidding. One of the things you said too was that when it comes to technology for the brokers, what they're fearful about is data breach. 90% regard data breach as the biggest risk to customers. Here in the U.S., we're doing a lot of work around, not just the U.S., but it's been on my mind because there's several groups that are trying to improve the ID and password, just an example situation that agents and brokers have to deal with and logging on to work with their carriers. But that's a huge fear. You know, 90% of them, that they say that's the biggest risk to their customers, the data breach.
Well, it cuts both ways, doesn't it? I think it's the biggest risk to customers being impersonated by other people online and fraud. So customers themselves are massively exposed, and therefore there's coverage opportunity there. Also, of course, anybody who holds data, i.e. brokers or carriers, of course, it's an enormous risk. And the prevention of that, the good news is, if you like, that with quantum coming up on the rails, you've got two things that are happening. One is quantum can break most passwords quite quickly because quantum is order of magnitude 8, 9, 10 times faster than traditional processing we've been used to for 60, 70 years. Mm-hmm. So it's number one, the existing arrangements are probably going to be seen to be quite weak, to say the least. Whereas the new types of security you can put in place as a consequence of these tools are probably going to be fantastic. And of course, we should be using more biometrics these days for, you know, frequent access. Well, I don't know about you, but it drives me nuts getting a password into anything. Everyone's got a different view of what it should be: 8 characters, 10 characters, alphanumeric, unusual characters, upper lowercase, you name it. Can't have repeats in the password. I've got a book of passwords. I have to keep. I wouldn't dream of putting them online, by the way, in any form.
Yeah.
But I've got a paper book on my desk. I've got all my passwords written in. But I spent half my life having to click the box that says, forgotten password. And we go through the loop again to get in. That is a massive barrier to wanting to engage with someone, yeah. By the way. After a while, the things that don't matter, you just give up.
You know, I have to say, David, I take some comfort in multi-factor authentication. When I get a text from my bank saying, here's your 6-digit code to complete your login, it does feel better there, I will say.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I don't mind it on my bank because that feels like a place where you're pretty vulnerable. Whether it's the same for my sort of my shopping voucher cards, that doesn't feel the same, but it's the same degree of security.
Yeah.
Which can be quite irksome, to say the least. But you know, that whole thing, I'm a great believer that we will have trusted intermediaries manage security in the future. They don't exist now. We're doing everything's point to point. Everybody's inventing their own passwords. Everyone's got different things. We don't want one because that's putting it at too much risk. But a trusted intermediary that we use, for example, for Experian or any of the bank credit reference agencies, you know, they're probably some of the best people aligned. But, you know, in the world, we do need trusted intermediaries who will manage security access on our behalf.
Yeah.
They don't exist. It's a huge opportunity.
David, in your talk, you mentioned that we're not in a technology era as much as we are. I believe you said intelligence era. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, I've lived through this since 1974, and I've seen mainframes, minis, micros, distributed, decentralized, blah, blah, blah. And they're fantastic. I love all these waves of change of technology, but actually it's one continuum. It's not, we like to break it up, or at least the consultants like to break it up into separate eras, and that's convenient to some extent. And we've talked about the digital era for a little while now, and we've called it that. But I think we're leaving that now. We're exiting the digital era. There's an assumption that you've done that. You know, that what you do use in technology and how you do things is digital. You use these tools effectively. You know what you're doing in the analytics, in the processing, in the engagement with people. You've got all that. Well, that's the digital era. The intelligent era is actually interpreting all that, analyzing it, forecasting what might need to happen next, how to resource your engagements, when to talk to people, what might have happened in the real world that means you need to make a call or ping an email or ping a TikTok if someone's into that or whatever to someone. You know, the smart world is upon us. And we see it in cities, we see it in automotive, we see it in every facet of our life. The emergence of AI in the form of machine learning and chatbots and all these other things that are the easy stage, increasingly the intelligent era is layered on top of the digital era. And you can't layer it on top of the analog era. You have to be thinking digitally, acting digitally, employing digital tools and mindsets. Then you can automate what you've got. So it's not a question of catching up by going digital. If you haven't already got digital, you know, there's two steps to catch up, or otherwise you'll be running behind other people who sort of get it. And AI isn't quite that sort of frightening robot thing that, you know, some folk could possibly imagine it is. It just comes out in the next release of a piece of software you're using, and it has increasing capabilities that maybe you turn off or maybe you don't, but they gradually come out in the next release. And those tools will increasingly allow you to predict what needs to happen next, to forecast when to engage with someone, to maybe interdict risk for your customer before they've even realized they have a risk in that area. So meaningfully interacting with your customer in a way that they realize, once you've explained it, that it's, hey, that's pretty cool. I didn't realize that was happening in my area, in my street, in my road, in my job, in my work. That's cool. You've looked ahead, you've seen what's coming. You can see where there's a potential issue for me, and you've got a potential solution. You know, we will get better at that. I mean, the first instances will probably be horrible, but we will get better at predictively helping people manage risk.
So I guess my final question would be then, given that era we're in, it's a heck of a challenge for the people listening to this podcast that own agents, brokers, and other insurance organizations, because How do you even know how to staff for something like that? What kinds of roles are going to be vital in the insurance industry in the future for this intelligence era? It's pretty daunting.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, we're just producing a really easy set of guides for the future skills. We've done a number of papers for clients recently, but we decided we're doing it from everyone's different perspective on what sort of skills you need for the future to embrace this world. So, number one, that'll be coming out from us soon. They exist elsewhere, by the way, and we're not unique in that, but I want to make it easy for people to consume these things from an individual, from an employee, from a worker, from an owner, from an operator perspective. What skills do I need? What technology might I engage? But what I would really encourage is the use of this three horizon tool I've mentioned, which is a very simple mapping of where I am now and what do I do and how long might it be relevant and valid and valuable to me, and what's the crazy world of what the future might look like. Be really quite outrageous and think about what might ramp up and come, and some good, some bad. And then it's the second horizon, the one that's really quite exciting. How do I bridge that? What are the things that maybe lead me from where I am today and the things I do that aren't necessarily going to be valuable in the future towards that world of the third horizon? So I don't have to make, dramatic steps or difficult decisions, but I can morph my way towards it. And then I can produce a strategy. So this is what I do. These are the sort of people I'm going to need. These are the tools that I'll need in place. These are the sort of offers and propositions I'd like to make. And then you can keep an eye out and say, when is the right time to start making these? Can I start using these tools yet? Can I start hiring these people? Can I encourage some of my staff to change skill, upskill, change role? And can I then think about what new propositions I might offer?
Yeah. You must have been maybe in a past life even an architect or engineer, because that's how my dad was one. I mean, he was both of them, and that's how he thought. He always think, okay, you can imagine a beautiful skyscraper, beautiful bridge. How do you get there? You start with the foundation. You start with the ground, which is what we know today, as you say, and then you can't get to that beautiful place until you start to build on top of what you know today and take some risks with things. And it's a really interesting way to think, and it actually is more of a calming thing, no matter what part of the insurance business you're in, to take those steps to get you to the second phase.
What is that annoying expression? The longest journey starts with the first step. And that's it. It's about starting that first step and realizing you can't eat the elephant in one go. It's a bite at a time. That's two horrible analogies. Sorry about that. But we just take these things in a calm, organized, considered way. Think about what we're good at, where I want to be in a few years. I know everyone wants to retire. That's a given. But sort of thing, what do I want to be doing? What could I be doing? It could be quite exciting.
Yeah, and well, I guess I didn't ask you one last question, because I'm fascinated by this sense of paranoia and paralysis that some insurance organizations have been in 2020, as we head into 2021. I feel like this is a great opportunity to do some of those things to get to that second horizon you're talking about. Why waste the pandemic?
Well, no, I mean, as they say, you shouldn't waste any crisis, should you? I said Churchill said that, I think, once, commenting about things. But Mike Becker at the PIA, he invited me some while ago to be part of the IT lab, thinking about technology and brokers and how things might change. And we wrote a paper for him that's available from our website, sort of Future of Insurance, looking at the role of broker, and agent, going forward. And it voices some of these issues that we've been talking about here today. But it is a good time. It's the ideal time. Our mindset, once we get over thinking about how to survive tomorrow, but once we do get over that, the next step, if you like, is, okay, I've got over that. Well, what has it taught me, and what can I do about it?
Yeah, I'm a huge Churchill fan. I just read a great book by Eric Larson, The Splendid and the Vile, about Churchill, what was going on during the bombings of England, in his personal life, as well as the political stuff. It's just a great read. I just love that whole history. It was awful what the British people went through. Goodness gracious. Anyway, I'm really diverting now. One last question. I wonder, so how was the lady who was the very first one, maybe in all of the Western world, certainly in the UK, who had the vaccine? She has not grown a third eye yet, right? She's good.
And she's still with us, I believe. She's pretty keen, pretty excited. She's in her 90s. She was encouraging everyone to take it afterwards.
Okay.
Well, we won't know, will we? We won't know for a while what the impact of all these various vaccines are. But they release people. That's the cool thing. By January, February, we'll start thinking quite differently again. And, you know, God forbid we don't immediately switch back to the old ways. I mean, I was on a call this morning with a bunch of lawyers, and many of them, marketers in these big law firms, were saying, we're not going back to the way it was. We're not going to spend money on these conferences and these sort of engagements with our clients. We get this works, and we don't need to do the same ways we always did them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite cool.
It is really cool. What the future will be. So, David, thank you so much for taking the time with us. If for anybody that would like to reach David, the company is thegff.com, and David can be reached at david.smith@thegff.com. It was a pleasure, David. Thank you so much for your time.
Good to talk to you, Peter.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.